hailing frequencies are open. Welcome to the Infinite Potato Alliance.
Welcome to That Star Trek Podcast.
Are you out of your mind?
Watch and learn. This is going to be awesome.
This is your place for detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek.
You are Starfleet to the core. I can smell it on you.
Join us as we dive into the newest content coming available, as well as retrospectives of the past series and films.
Do we need a mutiny today to prove who we are?
Now, on with the show.
We've only just begun.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to an all-new episode of That Star Trek Podcast, your place for detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek. My name is Sean Ray, and I may or may not have broken my back picking up peanuts.
Hang on, I've got a knife.
Before we get into tonight's episode, I want to remind you that you can contact us anytime with your thoughts on the latest episode of Star Trek. You can find out all of our contact information on our website, infinitepotato.com. You can write us on Facebook or Twitter, or you can send us an email. We generally record on Saturday night, so get those comments in and I'll try and read them on the show. But joining me tonight and answering a trivia question each, we have, back from an extended hiatus, Virginia's with us tonight. How are you?
Yay! I'm doing well. Hi.
All right. So Jennifer the Andorian was finally given a last name in this episode. What is it?
I have no idea.
Does anybody know?
I looked, it's like Karen or something like that.
It's Shrian.
Shrian. I for some reason, I got it in my head that it was trying to be some variation on Karen, but I don't know why I did that.
And that is the voice of Rick. How are you, sir?
Bad horse. He's bad. Sorry.
This episode canonizes that there are actually more than one crystalline entity. Until now, Starfleet had only known about the one that destroyed this planet where Data was first brought online.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Dr. Steele.
I don't.
Go ahead, Scott.
I do not remember the name of the planet.
Omicron.
Scott, you have to say it in the form of a haiku.
I'm not that quick. It was Omicron Theta.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
And that is Scott. And your official trivia question is, Tendi's simulation is a callback to the TNG episode Ethics. That episode establishes the Klingon ritual suicide, which is called what?
All right. The Hekba.
Yes.
I hate you.
Yes, that is correct.
When a warrior can no longer stand and face his enemies, it is time for the Hekba.
How are you, Chris?
Not Hekba worthy yet, but I'm getting
there. Your trivia question is, this is not the first time we've seen a member of the Pandronian race in Star Trek. What series were they introduced in?
Oh, softball.
I am going to answer this in the form of a haiku. I know the answer. The animated series, DeFilippis out.
That is correct. Okay, tonight we will be discussing the 8th episode of the 2nd season of Star Trek Lower Decks, which was titled I Excretus, written by Ann Kim and directed by Kim Arndt. And the original air date was September 30th, 2021. A consultant arrives on the USS Cerritos to run drills that require the lower deckers and bridge crew to swap duties. So what did we overall think of this episode? Virginia, what are your thoughts?
I liked it. There were a lot of callbacks. So that was interesting. Almost too many callbacks, if you ask me, but nobody did. So I think Rutherford's Sorry, my mind's going totally blank. Rutherford simulation was the most was the most humorous to me.
Yeah. I thought that, I had a question. Why do they need these holodeck pods when they can just use the holodeck?
Well, they're all because it, well, because it's cool, and you can put you put everybody in their own simulation. If you got 30 people on the holodeck, you're not going to be able to do 30 different simulations.
And I
not simultaneous.
I imagine that a California class isn't exactly overloaded with an abundance of holodecks.
Yeah.
California class has whatever the writers decide to put on it.
Well, they decided to put holodeck pods on it.
Oh, Chris, what'd you think? What'd you think of this one?
This was the second episode of Lower Decks that I genuinely enjoyed, and I found myself laughing out loud through all of it. I really loved the simulations and all of the callbacks, especially the TOS stuff. And to me, it was like a giant Star Trek amusement park. And I think that if we could all go into virtual reality or a holodeck, we might all engage in some form of the simulations that they did, whether it be the Mirror Universe or the Borg Cube. Or I thought Boyan Lasuri was the funniest.
Yeah. All right. Rick, what about you? What'd you think?
I enjoyed it. Not my favorite, but it was fine. I agree with Virginia. I think it pegged the callback meter a little too much. But that being said, I still had a lot of fun. I got a kick out of Boimler because my wife and I were watching it together. And my wife is like that. When she's playing a video game, if she comes up against like a boss she can't beat, she'll just do it over and over and over again until she beats it. Whereas I'm like, you know, three times and then I'm about to throw the controller at the TV. So I walk away. So I turned to her. I was like, he's like you. And she's like, yeah, because she was totally relating to him. Like, no, I'm going to do it better. And I, you know, the naked time was freaking hilarious.
Traumatizing.
All right, Scott, what'd you think?
I think it's my favorite episode of the season so far. I really like how they constructed the story. The different simulations that they put the crew in were they were entertaining. I was not the biggest fan of how they portrayed Mariner in her simulations, mainly because they've gone to great lengths to paint her as incredibly competent whenever possible, because she's such a seasoned officer for being a demoted lieutenant or ensign. And she can handle all these situations. And then the instant she steps into that simulation, even if it was rigged against her, and she was still, you know, stammering over her words and having no idea how to purport herself in that situation. They upped her incompetence in her simulations for comedic effect. It just didn't quite sit right with me. The rest of the episode was just fine. And I think it was how every clip show should be, is don't use actual clips, just borrow from previous episodes and previous series in your franchise and represent them like they did here.
I think I would say Mariner is more confident than competent. If that makes sense. I think she's very confident in herself, but that doesn't always equate doing good.
It doesn't always equate to her doing it right, but a lot of times her confidence is born from the fact that she is so good at stuff. Yeah. It's not false confidence. It's not false arrogance necessarily.
They started the series with her being secretly really good at everything. And they've been sort of pulling back on that when the situation requires it.
Yeah.
By the situation of, you mean the jokes, because yeah. I mean, what kind of captain is Freeman if she's going to leave four people out on a probe and warp away? Right. I said to myself, well, that is just that's criminal.
Yeah.
That's not just incompetent.
That was pretty bad. We just forgot that they're there.
And apparently now it's like, I guess it's canon, or it's Lower Decks canon, like they track you through your magnet boots. And if you don't sign them out, then they can't track you in space. That's where the tracker is, I guess. Not in your comm badge, not in your pad, not in your transponder.
I took that as ransom, just kind of trying to justify.
Yeah, he said we would have known you were out there if you'd have signed out your magnet boost or whatever. Nobody stopped and did inventory before they went to warp.
That's what I'm saying. So are they letting off a signal? Like, don't leave,
and then
don't
she
leave?
Called him on it. Then, you know, called him a piece of door closer.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think, I mean, you guys said that you thought that it had too many Easter eggs, but I didn't think, I mean, it wasn't nearly the Easter eggs that were in that collector episode. And they were more, because there were callbacks to episodes, but they weren't like being recreations of those scenes. Like we saw Rutherford doing the whole needs of the many.
That's what it was called. Of the few. Yeah.
But yeah. He wasn't actually there with Scotty. He wasn't actually Spock. You know, he was just in a similar situation. Hmm. Like these are based on this best of reel or whatever, but it's not necessarily the same thing.
I would have been a little less. I wish there had been at least just one or two that weren't directly from some other episode.
I agree.
Well, yeah, but she said that before they got in there that they were going to be based on the experiences of other crews.
And what episode would you count Boimler's? I mean, I know that he's on a Borg all the cube, Borg and stuff. We've seen the Borg cube a million times.
It was definitely the first Borg episode with Q. That was
best of both worlds.
I know that the babies in the drawer was the first time they saw.
That was the first
time.
Yeah. They were on a cube. Babies, right?
Babies and then the Borg queen was first contact.
First contact. So
it was, right. That, the first contact it really, I saw. It was, I noticed
it was
that.
Three. I would say they pulled it from three Borg episodes. Q Who, which was the first encounter with the Borg that had baby Borg in the drawer. It was a rescue mission. So that's Best of Both Worlds part one. And then you had the Borg Queen played by Alice Krieg reprising the role
of the Borg Queen
from First Contact and Endgame. Coming back a third time as the Borg Queen, and she still sounds fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. Because as soon as I saw that the Borg Queen was there, I had to look up to see who was doing the voice. Because I kind of thought that they were going to be using the voice of the new person playing the Borg Queen.
I just thought it was some actor. And then everybody was like, oh, my God, it was Alice Krieger. And I was like, so when I watched it the second time, I would never have known if I hadn't been told. I think she sounds very different. She doesn't sound bad. She just does not sound like she did in the movie.
But she sounds like 20 years old.
20 years old.
She sounds a couple decades older, but so just.
But I would not have picked up on that at all.
I'm with you on that, Rick. When I saw her name pop up, I was actually surprised because her voice is so distinctive and I've seen First Contact about a gazillion times.
Yeah.
So I think that I would recognize her voice.
I thought it was odd that all of those simulations came from. All the ones I remember came from TOS and TNG. I didn't see any DS9, Voyager, Enterprise, or anything like that.
Which further bolsters my headcanon that TOS and TNG are actual TV shows in the Lower Decks universe.
It would have been amazing to see an Enterprise simulation. I didn't even think of that until now, and now I'm very disappointed. Thank you very much, Sean Ray.
You can shoehorn it a little bit. If you really want an episode of Enterprise to be worked into this episode of Lower Decks, then you can say that Lone Star from season 3.
No, but they had the false storefronts from Spectre of the Gun and the Red Sky. I was thinking Lone Star the entire time that she was, you know, in the cowboy setting, and I was waiting for a Lone Star reference. She didn't make
one. Oh, okay.
Lone Star. Oh, not that one.
My initial thought was A Fistful of Data's, but...
And it's not Lone Star, it's North Star.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
You're right.
And I, you know, I was like, that's Spectre of the Gun right off the bat.
All the way. And I know, because I hate that episode. It's so boring.
Well,
it is, but I appreciate the craft of it. Not necessarily the story is kind of stupid. But the fact that they were like, all right, we're going to do this Western, but we have like $10 for a set.
Well, I figured they were probably just using a set that was already being used for something else.
No, they did that on purpose, but they were just like, we can't afford they, you know, it was season three and their budget had been slashed again. And both Nimoy and Shatner had demanded huge pay raises. And so they were hurting for bucks. And so both Spectre the Gun and the Empath.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Where they just did as, you know, they went as minimalist as they could. I grant you the Empath is not a great episode, but it's the one episode I saw in actual real time when it was its summer rerun. I don't think I even knew what Star Trek was at the time. I just saw, like, we were in a hotel room in St. Petersburg, Florida, which is bizarre that I now live there. We were in Florida for a vacation when I was five, and on the TV in the hotel room was The Empath. And, you know, it's not an easy episode to sit through. It is boring as all get out. But again, they said, all right, well, we don't have money, so let's do a round platform and nothing else.
Yeah. Mariner went into a mirror type situation and tried to get all creative and ended up getting points taken away and failed because she was trying to take over the mirror universe. My favorite part of that was when Billups comes by and talks about how horny he is. Nothing makes me hornier than torturing someone. I'm horny all the time.
And when I'm horny, it makes me want to torture.
I loved how everyone had the evil goatee.
Yeah. 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 Because there's been a lot of, Discovery did some mirror stuff. Deep Space Nine did some mirror stuff, but this was definitely TOS type, mirror universe.
Right down to Uhura's forearm jewelry. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We said Boimler was doing Q Who in First Contact. I also liked when the bridge crew they had to go do the lower decks jobs and stuff, and they were finding out what it's like to have to do all this work and nobody tell you what's going on. And this guy in a Robin Hood costume comes by and says, "Have you seen Q?"
We're gonna ask anything. Oh, it's the Jem'Hadar battle stations.
Of course, Rutherford was doing Star Trek II. Tendi was doing Ethics. But yeah, we got Sherry and Yim, if I pronounce that right, is the second Pandronian to appear in Star Trek after Ari Ben-Bim, who was in the eponymous episode Star Trek, the animated series called Bim. Her outfit is nearly identical to the one that he wore in that episode as well. So,
and as was the speech pattern of this one is, and this one's that. It's funny. That's one of the episodes I remember from my childhood. I remembered all of them as I was rewatching them, but there's a point in the episode where there's a transporter screw up and they end up like materializing over a lake and then they all fall into it. And this is when we find out that Bem can separate because they're all in the water and his legs go wandering off and start stealing crap off their belts. But while they're floating there, he says the line, "Assistance is offered." And my brother and I used that line for the rest of our lives. That and Kirk to Entity, which was from the same episode. They were like these two ridiculous lines that we picked up on. And I Bem, you know, well, do you know what Bem is from?
No.
The word Bem.
No.
It goes back to the early days of science fiction, like the Hugo Gernsback golden age of science fiction days, when BEM stood for bug-eyed monster.
Oh, okay.
And that was kind of, it became a derogatory term of, you know, the kind of, you know, you had all these magazines, Amazing Stories and Strange Worlds and stuff like that. And a lot of writers just fell back on the monster of the week and the bug-eyed monster became sort of a cliche. And then it got shortened to BEM. And then I think David Gerrold wrote that episode, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe it. He did, because I read something on StarTrek.com and they were talking about more troubles, more tribbles. So
yeah.
I think that they invoked Gerrold's name. So why else would they?
Yeah, if it wasn't Gerald, I don't think it was Larry Niven. It was a science fiction author. It was not, you know, just one of their staff writers. It was somebody of name wrote that episode and made Bem an in-joke.
Lower Decks is really, they're really pushing, trying to canonize as much animated series stuff as they can this season.
Why not?
This is like the third or fourth thing that they put in the... put in the show. We've had the 40-foot Spock. We've had the, what was the guy from a couple weeks ago? I can't remember the species.
The Kazinti.
Yeah, the Kazinti.
Yeah, and we had the shapeshifter was on that planet in the bar.
Yeah.
And you know, I kind of appreciate that about this show because, you know, they're only the second Star Trek animated show. They're coming in the midst of a 30-year debate over whether TAS is canon or not. And they're like, screw it. We're going to take all of this stuff and make it canon and F all y'all. So,
yeah. Mm. Yeah. Because, and it's easier for them to do because they don't have to worry about the logistics of trying to figure out how to make a character that can split in three different ways.
Well, exactly. Live action. Exactly. <know? laughs> That was the advantage that TAS had. And I really get, not angry, but I get a little tired of the guff people give TAS because it was not, you know, at the time, nobody knew that there would be another 30 years of Star Trek ahead. And the people creating it were doing the best they could to create something that was, you know, faithful to Star Trek, but still able to be aired on a Saturday morning. And I think they really did a good job of walking that tightrope, and they have gotten nothing but shit about it for 50 years now, or 45 years.
Can I posit a question?
Sure.
Do you think, had the animation style been better, that it would have gotten less guff? Because the animation is just so wonky, and the character design makes it even more unbelievable.
That's just the way Saturday morning animation was back then, because
but I remember Star Trek being like a real low. I mean, even like a lot of Hanna-Barbera was so cheap that all they did was move one arm. I grew up with this stuff, but it's just something about the animated series had an especially amateurish vibe to it compared to what else was on. Even Super Friends, which, you know, wasn't the greatest, was much better.
Yeah, no other cartoons had clear seams around their arms. They looked like, you know, and they ran like this and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, we made fun of that as kids too. It was ridiculous. Maybe if they had had the money and the time to do better with the animation. But, you know, people criticize the animation, but it's usually as kind of like an afterthought. But, you know, they dealt with topics like Satan being a champion for human beings. And, you know, again, they touched on the ancient gods were actually aliens with the Quetzalcoatl episode, or not a Kukulkan episode, not Quetzalcoatl. Mm-hmm. You know, some of them were silly. Yeah. You know, More Tribbles, More Troubles was goofy as hell. But, you know, it really kept the flavor of the series as it was at the time. You know, the color palette was a little weird. You know, there's the story that the producer was colorblind, that, and he's since said, no, that's not why we had pink tribbles. That's the way it happened. You know, I think for the time it was done and for the audience they were aiming at, I really think TAS is a lot better than people give it credit for. And a lot of the people criticizing it are the people that grew up with, you know, a more advanced aesthetic for their cartoons that was pioneered by Star Trek, the animated series. Yeah. Because if you look at the other stuff that was on at the time, you know, 1975 was not a high point, even for Saturday morning and, you know, television. You know, that was with, you know, Far Out Space Nuts and Ghostbusters and Jason of Star Command and crap like that was going on.
How dare you impugn Far Out Space Nuts? And that was live action with Bob Denver.
So. Exactly. Bob Denver. And it wasn't.
And that was the Tucker. Sid and Marty Croft hour. So that was on in the afternoon, at least here in New York it was.
No, it, yeah. It
wasn't on.
I said launch, lunch, not launch. You know, yeah. Anyway, I think TAS deserves a lot more credit than it's given. And I'm glad to see them. I'm really starting to get annoyed by the term canon. And not that I'm saying I'm mad at you for using it. I'm just every time Lower Decks does something, somebody's like, oh, now that's canon. I'm like, I have listened to a lot of behind the scenes stuff about Star Trek in the last 5 years. I highly recommend the 50-year mission and Nicholas Meyer's book, View from the Bridge, if you haven't read it yet or listened to it. They're fantastic, and they will show you that the writers don't give two Mario coins about canon.
According to Sean's soundboard, it's two sonic rings, please.
Two sonic rings now.
Anytime you're ready, Sean. There you go. Thank you. I want to chime in with what Rick is saying about canon. In my opinion, anything that Lower Decks is giving us in regards to is something now considered canon because it shows up in Lower Decks. You know, maybe Lower Decks is an anomaly. It's an animated comedy, which we haven't had in Star Trek before. And with the, if anyone is going to say, oh, I guess now, BEM and that split into three alien race, I guess that's canon now. Well, okay, yeah, if you want us canon, then it's also canon that Starfleet officers routinely get eaten and pooped out by gelatinous aliens, and that it's commonplace for ensigns to, cut each other to the bone with a batleth and just, be fine with it.
Yeah.
It's a cartoon, and it's cartoonishly ridiculous as a result. You can't necessarily take everything that shows up in the show as canon just because it's Star Trek on TV. It's one of those, some things we can go ahead and consider canon because it makes sense, and other things are too ridiculous and too far out. You can't reasonably consider that canon. You just kind of pick and choose as far as what this show gives you. It requires a bit of, common sense approach. And unfortunately, the people who whine too much about canon online are the people who don't necessarily have the common sense approach.
Yeah, I bring it up because I think it's funny that I love it when they canonize something that the haters are going to hate because it makes my heart warm because, I don't care enough about canon. They could canonize everything. They could canonize every single novel. They could canonize the TNG Nintendo game. They could canonize Star Trek Continues. I don't care. They can canonize all of it if they want to. Because I'm just going to watch it episode by episode. I really don't care. Because if you get into the weeds on canon, you can't enjoy the story because every single decision that they make, you're going to say, well, why don't they do it the way that they did on this other episode? They solved an almost identical problem 30 years ago on The Next Generation. Like, so what?
As far as I'm concerned, if it's on TV, it's canon. And I think I consider all of TAS canon. I consider all of Lower Decks canon because it just makes the universe more interesting, more strange. I mean, Scott, to your point, you're saying, okay, so we can select what they've canonized from the animated series, but what about something like, the Infinite Vulcan, where obviously it showed up in Lower Decks or the bones of the, 40-foot Spock did. So do we consider that canon, or is that just another silly aside that we say that's obviously too ridiculous to exist. Like, where do you draw the line? To me, that's a very subjective line that you're.
Yeah, I 100% admit that the line would be subjective, which means you can't necessarily cement a definitive canon based on what we're getting in this show. But then again, canon, it can, I guess, in a way, be considered different to every person.
See, but I guess maybe because I'm in the middle of a TOS rewatch, a very slow rewatch, but if something like the immunity syndrome had shown up in the animated series, people would say that's patently ridiculous, a giant space amoeba that's going to, but that is, you know, that's TOS to the bone. That was actually, I think, maybe one of the first bottle episodes / mystery science needs to solve this episodes that I think TNG really ran with, and that it turned out to be something really stupid like a giant space amoeba. Does that make it any less plausible for that universe? I think that there are things in the original series live action that are just as wacky and just as far out as anything you've seen in the animated series or in Lower Decks. But just because it's live action, we say that it's canon. To me, it's all canon.
Yeah, I mean, you got your canon that you can pay more attention to than other things anyway, because I mean, I used to have this giant Star Trek encyclopedia, and it only went up to the first couple of seasons of Deep Space Nine, because that's when I bought it.
Y'all are both
and if you look through that thing, oh, you've got
I'm certain it's
if you go through that thing, I mean, it's got, you know, that Robert April and Christopher Pike were captains of the Enterprise before Kirk. That means that by the time Kirk took on, no wonder Scotty was always complaining that the ship was falling apart. It was an old ship when he got it. You know, by the time it blew up in Star Trek III, it was past time for it to be decommissioned anyway.
I have that one and the updated double volume.
That's the one that I had, but I had it in like 1994. So, okay. All right. Well, does anybody have anything else they want to add about this episode? Before I did want to mention that I really like the way that they convinced I can't remember her name now, the lady that was doing the simulation. They convinced her to pass them because they just said, scan for something dangerous and let's go to it. it was almost like they were playing the old game that you play when you were a kid. Like, I dare you to touch it. I dare you to touch it.
I'm curious if anyone else interpreted this the same way that I did. When after they were done with the crystalline entity and they went to the black hole, the visual effect that started when they got there, with, you know, everyone having like echo trails of themselves going behind them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, everyone was thinking motion picture, right?
Total TMP.
Yeah, that's motion picture.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was
absolutely a callback. Jackass human piece of garbage.
Wait, anyway. What? Koenig isn't bad. Oh,
Stephen
Collins. He's talking about Collins.
Now, I only watched the episode 2 hours ago, so I have not been looking at any of the feedback or reviews online. Does anyone else think that visual callback to the motion picture is going to get hate from the haters online complaining that in the motion picture, that visual effect was for a wormhole, not a black hole?
I haven't seen anything like that, but I really couldn't give two Mario coins about them saying that. So,
yeah.
Scott, if you are betting that Star Trek fans will complain about something, I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah,
so I probably
I won't say it didn't occur to me, but it didn't ruin my enjoyment of the scene either.
Well, yeah, because those of us here on this panel are reasonable people, but unfortunately, not everyone is, which is why I hardly ever go on Twitter anymore.
Yeah,
there was a comment that was like, my Star Trek would never have like barely censored naked people, you know. And then there was a picture of a scene from what is it in Next Generation, The Naked Now, where they're like frozen in that one room. like you were saying. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yes. The frozen orgy where everyone is clearly naked, but you don't. Yeah. Or
back to Justice.
Yay, brother.
Or Risa.
The time.
Or Sherry Jackson's outfit in What Are Little Girls Made Out of? Made of.
What's the episode where Deanna and Waxana had to take their clothes off?
Menage a Troy.
Menage
a Troy. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the Dabo. What's the Dabo girl's name?
Lita. Or are you talking the fish face?
Lita, one? Played by Chase Masterson. I have her autographed photo on my wall
from that episode.
Ooh.
No, unfortunately not. We were not allowed to get the photograph of her wearing nothing but, I think it was nothing but an American flag loosely draped over just the right spots. She gave us free autographs because we hooked her up with someone who was trying to arrange another convention and they wanted her as a guest. And we said, how does a person go about trying to get you as a guest? Because we were at her table at this convention. And she said, if you bring them over here to talk to me, you guys will get free autograph photos. If you bring over this convention coordinator to have a conversation. And
we found this homeless dude and said, we'll give you a cup of coffee if you tell this chick you're doing a convention.
we ran because we were there with a friend of ours. Yeah, my buddy and I, we came from our city here. We drove 2 hours to get to our friend's place near Detroit. And we went to that convention. It was Motor City Comic Con. So we went, we found our friend. We said to her, Chase Masterson wants to talk to you about the convention. So go talk to her and we'll get photos. We got free autograph photos. Our friend got contact info for Chase Masterson, got a free copy of her vocal jazz CD that she had at her table and her cell phone number. Can you imagine how much time we spent after the convention at the house eating pizza, listening to that CD and staring at that cell phone number, trying to come up with an excuse, a legitimate, valid excuse to dial it.
Yeah. I don't think there is one.
Which is why we didn't dial the number.
We are rapidly approaching the end of our show. And when it's over, you're going to want to head over to our Patreon page. It's patreon.com/infinitepotato. We've got early access to episodes. We've got special movie commentaries. We're going to be recording a Halloween commentary later this month. We're going to be watching Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman. Patreon is a great way for you to support us. It lets us pay for Zoom and to update our equipment when we can. And you can help us for as little as $3 a month and get all that extra content. If you come in at the $5 level, you'll get thanked on the show. If you subscribe at the $10 level, then sometimes you'll get invited to be on the show. And I want to thank our producers, Bullet Bingo, Tom Corcoran, Dale Goodall, Brandon Ushio, and Jeff Hughes. Thank you for all the help that you give us every month. It means a lot, and it really helps out. All right. I want to thank everybody for being here. Virginia, welcome back.
Hi. Bye.
Thanks for joining us.
We've missed you.
I missed y'all back.
Rick, why don't you let everybody know where they can find you?
Just look for me here on Cosmic Potato or Infinite. We're not doing Cosmic Potato tonight. We're doing, I'm all over the Infinite Potato Network. You can find me. You know my shows. If you don't know them by now, you should.
We'll never, never, never know them.
If you don't know me. Ooh.
That's what I was doing, Rick.
Yeah, and I got it. But I'm not afraid to sing it.
All right. Chris, what about you? Where can we find you?
I am a host of the Quantum Leap podcast. You can find us at quantumleappodcast.com. Come on, listen, one and all. We're just about to drop the Mirror Image show. And then after that, we got a lot of great stuff planned for the future of the podcast. It's a really exciting time for the Quantum Leap podcast. Quantum Leap podcast.
It is awesome. It is fantastic.
What?
No, I've never heard it, but it's
you've never heard it. You and my co-host Matt Dale have never heard an episode of the Quantum Leap podcast.
And I haven't not heard it because it's bad or anything. I don't watch Quantum Leap, so I wouldn't understand what y'all are talking about.
Yes, Rick, I think we've established the same reason I want to open the iris because Stargate. Quantum Leap.
All right, Scott, let everyone know where they can find you.
Well, you cannot find me as a host or a guest on the Quantum Leap podcast, which is a shame because that show is awesome. And I know that because I do listen.
Thank you, Scott.
However,
you got one there, me. Chris.
There, yeah, see, there you go. You can hear me on this very podcast as well as on Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast, occasionally on Captain Game Show. And coming up soon, my very own new show, I'd Watch That for a Dollar, which is currently in pre-production of season one, where I will sit down with a different guest each episode and discuss a film that I purchased on Blu-ray or DVD at my local dollar store. If you're tired of listening to me, but you still want to see some of the stuff that I do, you can check out some of my graphic artwork. Find me on Twitter at Planet Rise, or you can visit my, as of this recording today, newly redesigned and refurbished website, www.planetrisecreative.com. You can see fake posters. You can see real posters.
It's amazing. It's magnificent.
It looks great.
I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I have seen it and it looks great.
You could have been talking about the work, but I guess you can just talk about the website, I suppose. Posters, social media avatars, book covers, web-based wallpapers and banners, whole bunch of stuff, as well as photo manipulation. And we are open for commission. So if anyone needs some work done, reach out to planetrisecreative.com.
I know firsthand that you won't be sorry.
I know this.
All right. Next week's episode title has not been announced yet. But regardless, we will be here to review it. So join us then. And until then, remember, why are they shaped like this?
Horses love me. Shut up.
They took everything I was.